Good morning. Today is Wednesday. It's 9:30 a.m., October 28th, 2009. The Portland City Council will come into session. Good morning, Carla. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Good. Can you please call the roll?
Leonard. I'm sorry. Fritz. Fish.
Here. We can't
Saltzman.
Hear you.
Here.
Adams.
Here. There's something wrong with your mic.
Who's muted?
Oh, it's muted.
Okay.
We're good.
I'm very pleased today to introduce, we have five very special guests as part of an organization that I've got familiar with over the past number of years that does fantastic work. And today we're going to hear from some of the individuals involved with the Pangea project, starting with Council Communications, item number 1482. Can you please read the title?
Request of Jasmine Menjivar to address council regarding the Pangea project.
Please come forward. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. Today, all you have to do is, for the record, you start out by giving us your first and last name. That's all. And then that clock in front of you will count down 3 minutes.
Okay.
Welcome.
My name is Jasmine Menjivar. Buenos dias. I go to Mount Scott High School. And I am a part of a nonprofit organization called the Pangea Project. The Pangea Project is for low-income youth to gain leadership skills, and we go to either Thailand or Ecuador to study about social justice issues. A big part of the program is to take action in our own community. And when we return, we so far have started learning how to grow vegetables organically, and we have been educating youth about consumer awareness. And a little bit about me. I got a chance to learn about organic gardening in Thailand, and I ate lots of vegetables, and I got used to eating the fresh organic meals. And something that I really wasn't really used to, because before I came to Thailand, back at home in Portland, I would throw up and feel disgusted because I would eat a lot of fast food. And I didn't know at the time until I came back. When I came back from Thailand, I tried eating fast food, and I just had that problem again. And then I noticed that while I was in Thailand, I didn't have that problem. You know, and I have a single father. He works two jobs, and I have no siblings. I pretty much live alone, so what am I to do? You know, I don't know how to cook. I'm a teenager, and fast food is right around the corner. So I learned how to cook a little bit in Thailand, so I went to the store. I went, and I grabbed some chicken and some meat, and then I went to a learning garden. I grabbed some tomatoes and carrots and broccoli, and I went in the kitchen and just started cooking. And I really love starting to cook now, and I love getting in the kitchen, preparing my own jasmine meals, and best of all, I don't get sick anymore, and, you know, I'm able to even cook for my dad, who's a single father, and his favorite is the teriyaki chicken, which is rice and chicken with teriyaki sauce on top and the broccoli with salt and pepper. And one thing that was really concerning me is that I would have loved it in high school if there was a class that taught me about gardening and how to prepare fresh vegetables and how to make meals with it. And I want to also, like, learn how to garden indoors. All I remember making in high school was gingerbread houses, sampling apples and crepes. That's all I pretty much remember doing. And, you know, I wish there was a garden, like, in the side of the school where I can come after school and maybe, like, work in the garden after school, you know, like some kind of gardening club. Not only that, but, you know, I hated eating the soggy wiener wraps and greasy pizzas and fake eggs in the morning. You know, I enjoy eating, like, fruit and yogurt and steamed vegetables over rice and with chicken on the side, you know, fresh. And, you know, not only that, but schools should be eating from local farms, and it would be supporting the farms, you know, the local farms around the Portland area. And, you know, it's not that hard to engage kids to garden. You know, you should force us to garden. We're already forced to do math, you know. So, you know, not only that,
gardening
but, like,
is much better.
Yeah. Gardening is like a lifelong skill. I learned that in Thailand, that all that they do is they do self-sufficiency, and it's a lifelong skill, you know? Like, if I'm out in the desert, I have $1 million, I don't, like, that can't get me anything. I have to go and do my work, you know? I have to go and see what kind of foods I can get and plants. And I know that I'm not the only one who gets sick when eating a double cheeseburger. And I want to make a change, but sometimes I just, like, people out there, they just don't know how to make that change.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Appreciate all right, thank you. Thank you for your time.
Can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 1483?
Request of Francisco Acosta Vasquez to address Council regarding the Pangea Project.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
Good morning.
You just have to give us your first and last name.
My name is Francisco Abel Acosta Vasquez, and I'm a recent graduate from Portland Youth Builders. I'm a member of the Pangea Project, and I want to talk about this person and my experience in Thailand that I just, because I'm also from the Pangea Project, and I went to Thailand. And I want to talk about this person that I met over there. His name is Sawit, and this is a man that basically came from living in the city, and his brother got killed, and he took revenge. Did the same thing. He killed the person who killed his brother. And basically his life was leading nowhere. And he used to use drugs. He used to, basically he had no route in life. So what I learned about this guy, this man, is that he turned his life around and he helped himself, which allowed him to help others. And what I liked about that is because this guy does anything for people. I mean, he gives himself, allows himself to help other people. And I admire that a lot because I know a lot of people who are in the same situation, but they're not able to help themselves. So I recently graduated from the school called Portland Youth Builders. And that school it really helped me, and it helped a lot of my friends that I'm going there. It gave them the opportunity to get somewhere. It gave them a career choice. I mean, it allowed them to finish high school. And I believe that this program is a very good one. And there should be more like it. And some of these programs need help. They need more help. They need to be more programs like Portland Youth Builders. It's a GED high school completion program. It's a pre-apprenticeship program also. And I mean, without that school, I wouldn't have been able to go to Thailand, and I wouldn't have been able to learn and see what I did. And so it's like they take people who are from 17 to 24 years old and have criminal backgrounds and help them fix their life up. And we just need more programs like that. I think we need more programs like that around Portland because they're very, very helpful. Help me out, help my friends out. I mean, I think it just helps people change their lives and puts them in the correct path. I mean, got me into construction and gets my friends into construction. So I believe that's something that's good, something worth investing. It's for our future.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Well said. Can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 1484?
Request of Carly Jo Strader to address Council regarding the Pangea Project. She's not able to make it.
Okay. Item number 1485.
Request of Myla Buckland to address Council regarding the Pangea Project.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
Good morning. My name is Mila Buckland, and I'm a junior attending Roosevelt Spanish English International School, and I'm a member of this project. So before my group went to Ecuador, we learned a lot about the social justice issues that go on in the country, and we learned that Ecuador has a huge financial debt. And when we traveled to Ecuador, we were there to get a global perspective and to get a closer look on the problems that they have to go through with their daily life. And we met a lot of people who are affected by the things that are going on because Ecuador turns to transnational corporations, which are companies that come from a different country, and they buy Ecuador's oil and copper resources. And we saw a lot of the destruction that happens in Ecuador. We saw a lot of families who didn't have the resources that we have here in Portland, and that we got a whole different experience, my group and I, because we never had to be in a situation where we didn't have running water, where we didn't have bathrooms, that had running showers and that had toilets that just flushed by themselves. We never had to pour a bucket of water into a toilet to make it flush. And so when we were in Ecuador, it was really easy for us to get down. Like if we saw all the problems that they had to go through, it could have been really easy for us to be down and to be depressed about their problems and feel like, oh, what can we do to help? Why isn't this fair for everybody in the world to have the same resources? But it was hard for us to be down when we were in Ecuador because we saw a lot of the people in Ecuador and we saw how they're not being sad about their problems, how they were doing something different about them. I play volleyball, and my coach told me once that if you didn't like something, you have to change it for yourself. And she said that about the game, but I saw that in real life when I went to Ecuador because I saw how there's a whole bunch of communities who are doing what they could to benefit themselves instead of turning to transnational corporations who took away their resources, who destroyed their environment. They made their own businesses. My group and I worked like side-by-side people who pick beans and make coffee and sell it to their community and make money for their community. And we were really, really inspired by the people who are in Ecuador because they found ways to make money for themselves so they wouldn't have to turn to a solution that destroyed their community. And I was inspired by all the people who did what they could to benefit their own problem, to help solve their own problem. And I think that we should focus more in Portland on the people who do that in their own community, who do stuff to provide for their families, and their profit goes to helping them and their families. That's it.
Thank you very much.
You.
Carla, can you please read the title for Council Communications item number 1486?
Request of Jessica Jenkins to address Council regarding the Pangea project.
Good morning. Welcome to City Council.
Good morning.
Glad you're here.
My name is Jessica Jenkins, and I go to Oak Bay Meadows High School, and I'm a senior, and I'm with the Pangea Project. So as like Mila, I was on the Ecuador team. So going to Ecuador was a life-changing experience, really wonderful, and I got to see things firsthand instead of like reading on paper about social justice issues. So it's more personal. So.
Pay no attention to him. He's with the media.
All right, well, the one thing that impacted me the most was this oil problem that they had in Coco, which is a town near the Amazon rainforest. So Texaco is a large oil company that drills for oil in Amazon. So in 1964 to 1990, Texaco drilled for oil. But they left a big mess behind. They dump 18 billion gallons of wastewater and 17 million gallons of crude oil, which destroyed the crops, the water, and just all the natural resources that they use. So the question is, do we people support this kind of behavior? So the answer might be yes for some who use Texaco as a source for gas or whatever. So.
You're doing great.
I'm extremely nervous.
Don't be nervous, it's just us.
Well, for those who support the oil company or whatever is something bad, when they go in, they dig oil pits and stuff, or dig pits in the ground, and they dump all the oil in it, which destroys everything or whatever. So ways to prevent this from happening is people should use other sources of transportation to save gas, like bikes and or scooters or whatever. And I think some shops, or for those people who don't have bikes, some of the local bike shops should donate bikes out to people, or volunteers come in and help do all that. And another way to prevent this from happening is people should walk short distances to certain places instead of getting in their car and driving, which is using oil. And another thing is people should use zip cars or something that saves more energy and stuff, or like cars that run by electricity or biodiesel and hydrogen and all that. So those are ways that you can prevent Texaco from going in and doing this other things. So,
thank you very much. Very well said. Appreciate it. And you're welcome to stay, but if perhaps there's something else you should be doing with your day, maybe school or something, unless you've got other things to do. I just want to thank the good folks at the Pangea Project team for, on a very small budget, doing such a great and wonderful thing for Portland's youth. Thank you.
Thank you for hearing us out.
All right, we will now consider the consent agenda. I'd like to pull item 1492 for a technical amendment. Is there any other items that need to be pulled?
Yeah, I'd like to pull 1499, 1500, and 1501. I just have some minor questions.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
1499, 1500, and 1501.
Okay. Carl, would you please call anyone wish to testify? Carl, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Fritz.
Aye.
Oh, sorry. Leonard.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have two time certains. The first one is a 9:30 time certain. Council calendar item 1487.
Accept implementation update on the City of Portland Economic Development Strategy, a five-year plan for promoting good job creation and economic growth.
All right. Well, our team is making their way to the dais. I think we'll need, On July 8th of this year, the City Council adopted a five-year economic development strategy to create 10,000 new jobs and position Portland as the most sustainable metro economy in the world. In July, we asked the Portland Development Commission, working with the Economic Cabinet, to come back this fall with an update on the implementation of the strategy and outline what we can expect in the coming years. Back in July, Robbie Roberts from Vestas Americas testified in support of the strategy and said very well what we hope to, one of the main goals we hope to achieve in this strategy, and that is Portland should be to clean energy what Houston was to fossil fuel. And while the implementation timeline for this strategy is 5 years, it is important that we started work on it right away, and we have. We have, among other things, launched the Clean Energy Works program and are busy on the in the midst of the pilot of clean energy retrofits, energy savings retrofits to 500 homes. We've adopted the open source purchasing policy for the City of Portland. We've also been able to recruit Revolt, which is a Swedish zinc air battery manufacturer that chose Portland for their North American headquarters. Since electric cars need batteries, this is a very big recruit, a team effort. And after we met with almost 30 venture capital fund managers, we were introduced to a number of small software firms, such as Greenprint Software, that we're working with for the City of Portland to be a customer and help them in turn get other customers. We've met with a number of delegations from afar, and next week I travel to Japan, not only for the 50th anniversary of our sister city relationship with Sapporo, one of the oldest sister city relationships in Japan, not only to celebrate that, but to also do business calls, everything from, and also academic calls, like Tama Art University, to discuss a partnership with a product design program with the Portland campus of the University of Oregon moving forward, one of our four targeted industries. And I'll be meeting, along with PSU President Vim Vivel, Mitsubishi and Nissan, to make sure that Portland is the launching point for their electric vehicles. So now I'd like to turn it over to Kimberly Schneider and PDC Chair Scott Andrews and Patrick Quinton, who will discuss the next steps and take us through a concise but very entertaining update on where we're at, as we promised in July, and implementation efforts. Kimberly.
That's right. Good morning. So as the mayor mentioned, we said we would come back this fall and give an update as to what PDC and the mayor's staff and our key partners are doing to make good on the commitment to bring 10,000 jobs in the next 5 years. In the future, you'll receive these quarterly reports online. They're available at pdxeconomicdevelopment.com. But we thought it was important for this first time to share with you the progress that we've made and answer any questions that you might have. So you hear from Chair Andrews and Patrick Quinton, who's the lead staff and is responsible for implementing the strategy. overseeing the work at PDC. But before they begin, I'd just like to thank the Economic Development Cabinet, who's used their expertise in small business and academia, large business, nonprofit leaders, and organized labor to really advise and move forward the strategy. So a lot of the things that you'll hear about this morning, these folks have had a big hand in making sure that they happen.
Thank you, Kimberly. Chair Andrews.
Thank you, Kimberly. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Scott Andrews, Chairman of the Portland Development Commission. It's my pleasure to begin the first of many PDC presentations to City Council on the City of Portland's economic development strategy. In these difficult times, we must make sure that the strategy is implemented, and we plan to report annually to Council on the status of the work plan, as well as the results to date. We will also preview the initiatives and projects underway and detail our expectations for delivering on the five-year plan. I also want you to know we will be returning to Council in November for a detailed report on our community economic development efforts. At that time, you'll hear about the numerous grants and low-interest loans that we've been providing to small businesses throughout the city, and our soon-to-be-announced Green Main Streets program, which will provide funding and support for our city's neighborhoods. Both programs increase equitable economic opportunity for Portlanders. Back to the broader action plan, you adopted the strategy in July of this year. It is the first to be formally adopted in more than 10 years. It calls for an aggressive plan to create 10,000 new jobs over the next 5 years by focusing our limited staff and resources on four large and growing clusters: software, clean tech, advanced manufacturing, and activewear. Through this strategy, the City of Portland has also embarked on the next generation of green urban innovation, including the construction of the first commercial living building in the United States, branded as the Oregon Sustainability Center, and pilot eco districts, both to strengthen our international reputation as the center of sustainability and to grow jobs in the urban core. We also continue to support other important clusters, as well as our higher education institutions. For example, we are now in the process of approving a grant to PSU in collaboration with OHSU to help build a new shared wet lab space that will provide some critical infrastructure to our bioscience industry. Thanks for giving us this opportunity. Now let me introduce Patrick Quinton, who leads our business and industry division at PDC.
Thank you, Chair Andrews. Good morning. So as Kimberly and Chair Andrews mentioned, we're going to revisit the strategy just briefly, just to remind everybody of the approach, and then we'll report progress primarily on goals 1 and 2 of the strategy. As Chair Andrews mentioned, goal 3 will be reported on next month in a detailed briefing on our neighborhood business efforts. So the goals 1 and 2 will be the focus of today's briefing. Before I get into the briefing, though, let me just remind everybody where we're at from a more of a macroeconomic perspective. We're still obviously in a recessionary environment. We continue to see unemployment rates in the region that are well above the national averages, and we continue to see job loss as opposed to job creation. And while these conditions are certainly not favorable for our strategy implementation, they certainly, I think, we're at a point now where we're beginning to see a turn in the environment. If you follow the trends here, I think we're seeing a flattening of the unemployment rate, and the rate of job loss is declining. What you'll see, though, in our strategy is some of our efforts are designed to address the areas in our economy that have experienced the most significant job loss, namely the construction and manufacturing sectors, which really have been hardest hit in this recession. The other thing it's worth noting is that many of our businesses are still having difficulty getting access to capital, both debt and equity capital, and that's going to be a constraint on job growth in the region. And part of our strategy and the broader efforts of the city is to reverse that trend as well. So this is a very simplified reminder of how we designed the economic development strategy. Three goals: maximizing the competitiveness of our traded sector businesses, driving urban innovation that encompasses the innovative work that we do in the physical environment, and then the third part is our neighborhood business vitality strategy. As I mentioned, that will be addressed next month. So I'm going to talk about our first two efforts. These three different goals are designed to work together to stimulate job growth throughout the city, job growth that comes not only from our traded sector businesses, the clusters that Chair Andrews mentioned, but also the small businesses throughout our city, as well as drive growth in the construction industry through investment in Central City and neighborhood revitalization. So this is a quick snapshot. The implementation of the economic development strategy is obviously quite complex. The strategy ended up with over 30 action items. Within the competitiveness goal, we are tracking these action items. And as you can see, the progress, we're a quarter into this strategy. So the progress on many of these fronts is limited. We will, as we report quarterly, we'll continue to update this, and you can see how we're tracking. I would like to point out that the two areas where we are seeing the most progress are the Clean Energy Works program, as the mayor mentioned. That's been quite a success story, both in terms of its objectives, but also in terms of how quickly we got that program up and running with stimulus money. So that's been quite an achievement. And then the second activity is our existing harbor redevelopment initiative, which is designed to return contaminated industrial land to productive use. And that was an existing program that now has a greater strategic context with our focus on manufacturing. Once again, these are the infrastructure action items that relate to our competitiveness section. So it's our international strategy, our higher ed strategy, and workforce, which all support our work with cluster firms. So I just want to give you a quick overview of our achievements to date within our competitiveness activities. Most of these relate to our work with clusters. As the mayor mentioned, we have successfully recruited a company called Revolt, which is manufactures a innovative battery technology that has applications not only to the electric vehicle industry, but also to other sectors in clean tech, including renewable energy. We expect that company to produce between 75 and 250 jobs here in Portland and the region. There will be a combination of office and engineering jobs as well as manufacturing jobs. We continue to make significant progress in our solar recruitment efforts. We are actually expecting another regional recruitment to be announced within the month. So that, I think, the Oregon is established itself internationally as a home to solar manufacturing, and we continue to see great results from those efforts. And then Oregon has been the beneficiary of significant stimulus grants, both in our electric vehicle cluster. We've had $340 million awarded to Oregon battery manufacturers, and then Portland is also going to be the site of some testing of electric vehicles and charging stations that have been funded by stimulus dollars. In addition, on the wind energy side, Oregon-based companies and companies with a presence in Oregon have received over $600 million in stimulus awards to develop wind farms. Some of those wind farms are in Oregon, but in terms of the administrative presence for those companies, that's located here in Portland, and so those dollars will significantly impact jobs here in the city. And then lastly, as the mayor mentioned, we have our Clean Energy Works program, which really is a clean tech initiative designed at growing our energy efficiency sector. We also are making progress in our activewear cluster, as well as our advanced manufacturing cluster. In activewear, we are working on a business plan for something called a materials library, which is a collaborative industry effort to create a shared resource for companies throughout the activewear and other design industries. And on the manufacturing side, we received the good news recently that Freightliner is going to stay in their site. That will retain 650 jobs here. But it should be noted that throughout the time since Freightliner announced their previous plans, we had been marketing that site for other manufacturing uses that involved our clean tech industry. So we were actively working both scenarios, and once again, we're fortunate that Freightliner has decided to stay. On other fronts, on higher ed, I think it's important to note that we've made significant progress in our relationship with PSU on economic development. PSU just recently announced their economic development plan, which closely aligns with this economic development strategy. It sets the stage for extensive collaborations with our cluster work, with increasing PSU's research and innovation agenda, and then certainly on the workforce side as well. Chair Andrews mentioned the wet lab work that is about to get underway at the PSU Accelerator, which will benefit both PSU and OHSU. And then the last thing I just want to highlight is our work on the workforce side. The workforce strategic plan that is monitored by Work Systems Inc. recently was aligned with our economic development strategy as well. So we're seeing alignment on many fronts around economic development. And then on a specific note, the Clean Energy Works Program has, once again, an innovative community workforce agreement, which ensures that the jobs created through this initiative will flow to local residents. Just want to remind everybody of our four clusters: clean tech, software, activeware, and advanced manufacturing. Each of these clusters has a significant presence in Portland, has experienced significant growth up until the beginning of the recession, and each of these have competitive advantages, which position them well for growth when we come out of the recession. We anticipate that our work with these clusters will be responsible for we believe about 2/3 to 3/4 of the 10,000 jobs that we're projecting as part of this strategy. So it's a big part of our efforts to achieve our 10,000 job goal.
And just to for Council's and viewers' appreciation, there's a recent report done in terms of all the industries out there. Clean technology was one of the few industries that has actually grown during the recession, actually improved its position.
Right. We this is just a little reminder of how we are organizing our work. Both PDC and the city are organizing our work around clusters. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but we are approaching each of these clusters in a very methodical way, working with the clusters that are more mature, working with them at a different level, more of an action stage level than we are with some of the more emerging clusters like software. So our clean tech, some of our more mature clean tech industries, as well as advanced manufacturing, we are working with them in terms of actual initiatives, whereas on software, energy efficiency, and some of the others, we're trying to help them come together in a way that they haven't in the past, and then that will lead to an action agenda.
And I'd like to pause there just to this members of the City Council in the past have rightfully picked up on when our business assistance and job creation efforts were more rhetoric than substance. And so we've pushed really hard to pursue the honing of this strategy, going from all the possible industries we could focus on, and Chair Andrews said it well, in terms of our limited staff and resources, we need to be very, very strategic. So we have now figured out the four, based on research, that we have a local advantage in and that we're going to see the most global growth, therefore benefiting our local economy. Hopefully the best with the resources and the leadership that we have. Having narrowed it down to four, though, we need to hone the strategies for each of those four, and this is the basic template for doing that, as opposed to just words on a paper and a laundry list of to-do list within the area of clean technology, which is a huge industry with a lot of different segments to it. We're honing in on, of all those segments, where do we have the opportunities for the fastest growth in terms of local jobs. So the honing of the strategy continues at the same time that we're out there hustling for, you know, businesses with a focus on helping local businesses grow.
Now, I hope I'm not stepping on Patrick, but the other thing I'd point out is that these type of jobs are important because they create other jobs. These kind of jobs create restaurants and grocery stores and gas stations and doctors and attorneys and all of the other things. So it's another really good reason to focus on these sorts of clusters.
Thanks. So in terms of looking ahead, so we've just talked about what we've accomplished to date. In terms of looking ahead, we're taking two different time horizons here in terms of reporting on this. Within the next year, I've kind of given you an update on where we are to date. I think within the next year, we expect to see significant progress on the materials lab effort that I mentioned. We expect to see a articulated strategy for addressing the lack of venture capital and other capital in the market. We hope that the Clean Energy Works program completes its pilot phase, which is roughly 500 homes and 30 jobs. And then as part of that, that we've helped develop the supply chain to meet the demand for products and services as part of that effort, and then set the stage for additional work as the program grows. And then I think that cluster development process that the mayor described will have progressed along, and we'll have more detailed information on industry trends and opportunities within each of our clusters. Over the next 5 years.
And if I could,
yeah.
Just as President Obama tried to shake the tree from his position in terms of getting banks, especially who have received TARP funding, to start lending more to small businesses, we are going to be convening the financial institutions locally in November to do the same. We're a local government. We have even less leverage on them, obviously, than the President of the United States, but we're going to do what we can.
If we were to look ahead 5 years and I were to provide the highlights of our work at that point, I think we'd like to see roughly 3/4 of the 10,000 jobs provided from our cluster work. I think we'd like to see reactivation of at least one of our harbor-ready sites, which given the obstacles that we face with some of the sites, I think that's a significant achievement. We would see active supply chain work within each of our clusters. The Clean Energy Works program would be an extensive program with significant scale, up to possibly 20,000 homes. I think we'd see more robust connection between our research work at the universities and our local firms, and then we would have developed a full supply chain for the energy efficiency and green development sectors and building out buildings like the Oregon Sustainability Center and other kind of high-tech buildings. So moving over to the second goal, urban innovation, once again, a high-level snapshot of where we are on implementation. The categories here are broader because they encompass much of our redevelopment work, particularly in the central city. We've made significant progress in advancing the Oregon Sustainability Center. I'll get into that in more detail in a second. But the conceptual work is really finished. I think we're in the feasibility stage. We're looking at issues like who the tenants are going to be, what the financial model is. So in terms of the development of that particular project, we have made significant progress. And then I think when we look at our work with PSU and OHSU in terms of their physical expansions, there's a lot of work that's been done. The campus planning by PSU and our the contributions of the Sustainability Center, the potential eco-districts, streetcar, things like that, I think have helped flesh out that campus expansion plan. And then in OHSU, our work in South Waterfront with their campus planning and the Life Sciences Center and light rail going through there have helped flesh out that part of their campus expansion. So today, on the urban innovation goal, and let me just remind you, the urban innovation goal really was about trying to maintain the city's leadership position in sustainability, and in particular, green development, and you know the innovations that we have as a city became known for, and it's why we have an international reputation. Those are we felt in the strategy we needed to call out the need to continue to push on the envelope in that regard, and so we this is part of the strategy for that reason. And so initiatives like the Oregon Sustainability Center and eco districts are crucial in that regard. They are the next generation of green building innovation. So they're the highest priority action items within this agenda. So if you look at the Oregon Sustainability Center, we have the state has committed $80 million to this project. We're seeking additional money from the federal government. There was a delegation that went to Washington recently to raise awareness for this project and to begin to educate Washington on how they need to fund projects like this, because this cuts across so many different funding areas, different programs, and Washington really isn't set up to fund projects like this, even though that's what we're all supposed to be doing. So that project has advanced quite a bit.
Patrick?
Yes.
Just a quick addition on that. It was a great delegation, public, private, went back to Washington, D.C. We had about a dozen meetings in 2 days on this issue. And just to underscore the part that you said where we're ahead of the federal government at this point is looking mostly at funding technical assistance and feasibility studies on how to bring together all these components, green building components, and to make very green buildings. In this case, it's a living building. And so our challenge with the federal government is that we're ahead of the sort of curve in terms of where they're at. They're still doing technical assistance and funding feasibility studies. We're beyond that. But our delegation was very enthusiastic about this project, so we're going to keep hammering away at the federal government for funding.
The discussion around a Central City URA is also an important piece of this, to the extent that we will be undertaking innovative projects like the Sustainability Center, eco-districts around the Central City, particularly on the west side. We need to figure out whether or not we have the right resources to do that. So that process, the progress that we have made on that is significant in advancing this agenda. Life Sciences Center, which will be one of the centerpieces to the OHSU campus on South Waterfront, received $130 million in bond financing or the authority to issue those bonds. That's that project, if we're able to close the final funding gap, will be an anchor to that campus and obviously will drive collaboration between the various universities and drive innovation in life sciences and other industries. So that's so the progress that we've made on that is significant. Eco-districts, we have requests in for that. The eco-districts are still in the conceptual phase, but it's, like I said, it's the next step in our work, in our kind of major redevelopment projects. And lastly, we have submitted an application for $40 million Tiger Grant to help build out a lot of the infrastructure in and around the PSU and OHSU campuses. And we have coined that the innovation quadrant because it really the notion is to connect PSU, OHSU, OMSI through the light rail bridge as an innovation district for the city of Portland, and so the infrastructure needed to build out those connections is an important piece of that, and so the application that we've submitted is as a first step in finding the funds to do that. Once again, looking ahead on this goal, I think within a year we'd love to see a decision on a new downtown URA. I think we'd like to see that the first eco district has been designated and we're moving forward on that, and that we on the Sustainability Center that we figured out issues like funding and who the tenants are and how we move into actual construction. 5 years from now, I think we'd like to be able to say that we have two eco districts under development, that we have an open Sustainability Center that people are visiting from around the world, this innovative building that once again, as attaching the two goals, we have a real developed supply chain that is connected to our green building industry and that it's driving growth in that industry. And then we've moved beyond the signature projects like the Oregon Sustainability Center, and we're now looking at other sites like Burnside Bridgehead and freeway land and linking development there with our clusters. That's an important part of the strategy, that the work that the investments that we make in these catalytic sites is actually tied to the work that we're doing in terms of driving traded sector job growth and driving growth in our construction industry. And then the last thing I would highlight on this is we really believe that this part of the strategy is that we need to make Portland an even greater center of innovation, and that involves all the different institutions that play a role in economic development. But we'd like to, 5 years from now, look back, have people now say about Portland that it's a center of innovation. If I want to start a business, this is where I want to be. If I have an interesting research project, but that I want to be at PSU or OHSU, that this is viewed in some respects like other regions across the country that are viewed for their innovation. So that's our update, and we would love to take any questions or hear any reactions. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, comments from council?
Are you gonna, comments?
You want to do it when we vote? Or?
No, well, yeah, but that's right. You can do that.
Okay. Unless there are, Do we have anyone signed up?
No one signed up.
Okay. Carla, can you please call the... Well, first off, I'll do it when I close. Yes. Please call the vote. We got a lot to cover today.
You want a motion for to accept the report?
Oh, I'll
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the report contained in Council Calendar Item 1487. Carla, would you please call the vote?
Leonard?
Well, Sam politely referred to those of us who have in the past listened to similar presentations and have been less than enthusiastic given the lack of follow-up that consistently occurred. Anyone who works with or knows Sam at all knows that when he takes on, and you know, Scott is politely nodding and smiling before I even get it out of my mouth, who knows that when he takes on an initiative such as this, he is anything but a shallow symbol of wanting to look like he's doing something good, but actually wants something done, which is why he politely interrupted you throughout your presentation to make sure specific exclamations were put behind certain points. I could not be more impressed than what I have read and heard here today on a number of levels, not the least of which is it's just really, I think Dan and I sometimes suffer from being here so long. We put things in such context that we sometimes don't get the more meatier message being sent because the context I'm looking at this from is a PDC that at least was at odds with the council and mostly even with the mayor, and frankly ran amok in terms of economic development, absolutely apart from and disjointed from whatever policy the council wanted. I'm sitting here today listening to a mayor and PD staff and the mayor's office having collaborated and worked just exactly the way PDC was designed to work, and that is as our economic development agency. Sounds simple. Didn't happen until Sam became mayor. We have arisen from our slumber. This city was in slumber for 4 years. And this is a key milestone for me in that. And I would suggest that those business leaders who really truly believe that we need a good economic strategy plan ought to focus on how we can help them sell more Chevrolets and sweaters and not sit back and try to impose their privileged view of the world, including their morality, and switch gears and come down here and sit with you guys and figure out how we can sell more Chevrolets and sweaters. That's what this is all about. And so sometimes people ask me, what's it like sitting on the city council? I said, it's kind of like being in a wind tunnel, a horrific wind tunnel. And if you don't grab a hold of the rope in the center, you are thrown here and there and never gain your balance. And for me, I think of it like grabbing a hold of the rope and just not letting go, and making sure I keep my eye on what it is I want to do. Well, that's exactly Sam's approach, how he balances the various aspects of being mayor and then can focus on bringing this all together, needs to be understood by Portlanders. This I would stack Sam and this policy up against Mayor Daley, who I'm a very huge fan of, Mayor Bloomberg of New York, who I'm a very big fan of, and I think we would win. Nobody has a better economic development strategy focused on the industries that this country and world should be focused on than Sam Adams. And I respect that and appreciate that and find it a privilege to work with him. Hi.
Fritz.
I too am very impressed. This report was out in July of 2009, this very same year, and it's now only October, and here you are coming back with a very specific report about what's been done and what's going to be done. I was very glad to see mention of freeway land as in part of your strategy. It's not just about downtown. It's not just about the harbor, and freeway land is out in Lentz by 205, and that's part of our city, too, and we want to have economic development in every corner of our city, so appreciate that. Echoing Commissioner Leonard's sentiments on the role of Mayor Adams and the Portland Development Commission, thank you for your work. And noting that when the mayor hasn't been here the past few weeks, he's been off in British Columbia and the District of Columbia, and now he's going off to Japan. And these are not jaunts to have a good time. They're working trips to implement this strategy, and it's key that we do that and that we have a mayor who does that. So I appreciate that. Also, Erin Flynn in Portland Development Commission staff and all the commission staff, and Kimberly Schneider in Mayor Adams' office, you assembled a great team here, and it's working well. often this kind of report that you put out in July would sit on a shelf. And this is not only not, it's sizzling in the frying pan, never mind, it's not sitting on the shelf. I would like to see updates every 6 months to see how things are going. Paul Sliman in the Harbor Ready program has been providing me with monthly updates, and I'm very impressed with his strategy of three-month check-ins and a very specific to-do list. And it's not just a, whenever we get to it, it's this is going to be done by this date, this is going to be done by this date. And I'm certainly very excited with the Office of Healthy Working Rivers to be working on the Harbor Ready project in collaboration and seeing what else we can do to add value to that. And so that's what I had to. You read the report and it's impressive, and then hearing you talk about it and hearing the mayor's comments to add even more that's been put into it. Many things we've done in the past few weeks have shown how many different partnerships we have, partnerships with the businesses, with the community, with all kinds of different agencies, and it's working. So thank you very much. Aye.
Fish.
Well, since I have two eloquent colleagues who precede me under this rotation, probably the smartest thing to do is just to say I associate myself with their remarks. Patrick and Scott and Kimberly, thank you for a very sharp and very informative presentation. I'm tempted to say that I also saw it on Channel 30 the other day, but then you'd be questioning my private life. And then I also want to just echo what's been said about Sam's leadership on this. This is an outstanding piece of work, and it's wonderful to have things that we can come back and verify. And frankly, one of the criticisms I've heard about the housing world that I'm in charge of is that we don't do a good enough job coming back, setting up our benchmarks, and then showing how we met them. So there's a lot for us to learn here as well. So please to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I'm very impressed with the presentation and the progress. I want to acknowledge Mayor Adams and his leadership role here in aligning. He's very good at aligning, taking chaos and aligning order out of that. And the order as it stands now is to focus on clean tech, advanced manufacturing, software, and activewear. And I think those are, doesn't mean we're excluding other opportunities, but those are really the areas that I think hold promise, potential, areas that Portland offers somewhat unique opportunities for those businesses to thrive. And at a time when we are really in the darkness, hopefully seeing the light at the end of the tunnel in terms of the economy and jobs, I think there's great potential here, not only as has been demonstrated by recent announcements about Revolt, the electric battery manufacturer, putting its headquarters here, but also the tremendous investments in wind energy that, as Scott Andrews said, will spin off many, many jobs here, even though the wind turbines aren't necessarily going in Oregon. But we are well positioned, and we have to seize our opportunities, and it's great to see that PSU and OHSU, and I'm sure PCC is in there in the mix as well, are all working together here to make sure that we meet that goal of 10,000 jobs in 5 years. So keep up the good work, and we'll be watching, and thank you. Aye.
Adams.
Well, my colleagues have been very generous with their praise, but this is very much a team council effort. Every single one of them have been moving forward either pieces of this economic development strategy, taken on other work so I can focus on this, or helping folks in need. And we've got a lot of folks in need in this community and in communities across the United States. So I'm just very grateful for their compliments, but I'm also very proud to be part of a group like this that is more focused on job creation and business success and helping folks in need than I think any other council that I've had the privilege to serve around or work for here at City Hall. But it is a team effort, and I want to acknowledge Kimberly Schneider and my great economic development team in the mayor's office, Skip Newberry and Clay Neal. We've got a great chair of the Portland Development Commission and Chair Scott Andrews and Patrick and Aaron and Keith and Bruce and the entire PDC team, as Commissioner Leonard alluded to, is more focused and on point than ever before. So thank you all for your work. We'll be back. Aye. Report approved. Thank you very much.
Thanks
for the presentation. Can you please read the time certain, 10 a.m. time certain, item number 1488?
We read all three, Mayor.
Oh, they're all related, and 1489 and 1490.
1488, approve memorandum of understanding with TriMet and Oregon Rail Heritage Foundation to ensure public benefit of city-owned historic locomotives, 1489, approve loan to Oregon Rail Heritage Foundation to secure property for permanent maintenance and operation of historic steam locomotives owned by the city, and 1490, authorize management agreement with Oregon Rail Heritage Foundation to operate and manage 3 city-owned historic locomotives.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. And before I preview this item, I just want to report to my colleagues that we had a very successful dedication yesterday of Director Park and Teachers Fountain downtown. Commissioner Saltzman was there and others, and we had, I think, over 300 people who crammed the plaza. And I had the occasion on behalf of this body to thank Tom Moyer and Jordan Director Schnitzer for the $8 million cumulatively that they invested in that project, which represents 60% of the overall cost. It is astonishingly beautiful. And if you saw it Friday or Saturday, you wonder how on earth they had it ready for that event, because it looked like it was about half finished. But we had a wonderful celebration, and Rebecca Levinson, the head of the PAT, was there on behalf of teachers to dedicate the fountain. So it was a lovely event, and I encourage you to visit. And the restaurant, Violetta, will be serving food in 3 weeks. And there'll be a soft opening, which I'm sure we'll all be invited to. So thank you for your support on that great project. I was very proud to represent the city at the opening. So today we are asking the council to approve a package of 3 separate agreements with the Oregon Rail Heritage Foundation. This is a little complicated, so if you bear with me, I'll try to lay it out in my opening and answer, anticipating most of your questions. But we have our team here to answer any questions that you have that beyond. So a little history. Through a series of donations from railroad companies in the 1950s, the city of Portland actually now owns 3 historic locomotives. It was surprising for me to learn that as well. And the locomotives are currently stored at Union Pacific's Brooklyn Yard and are under the management of the Parks Bureau. I understand that Portland is the only city in America that actually owns operating steam locomotives. The Parks Bureau, in turn, has established relationships with several nonprofit organizations who perform the day-to-day operation, maintenance, and ongoing restoration of these civic treasures. Each of those nonprofits are represented by the Oregon Rail Heritage Foundation, or ORHF. We'll just call it the foundation, I think, today, a nonprofit corporation which serves as the umbrella organization. About a year ago, Union Pacific, now this is where it gets a little complicated, notified the foundation that they would need to relocate the locomotives to improve rail traffic. And they have set a deadline of January 2012 for these locomotives to be relocated. Based on that, the Foundation, TriMet, the Portland Bureau of Transportation, and Parks have all been working closely and diligently to find a new home for the locomotives. The preferred site is, as you can imagine, the OMSI district, for a lot of reasons, including the fact that OMSI would like to incorporate the locomotives into their programming for the public. And that would be just north of the proposed Milwaukee Light Rail Station in that particular area. Now, this relocation effort is not without complication, in part because it intersects with many projects, big projects, which are currently proceeding in the Eastside Industrial District. For a variety of reasons, the request that we have before you today proposes a 2-phase resiting plan. Ideally, the foundation would take some time, clear all the debris and all the issues, and move directly to their preferred site. However, that's not possible. Therefore, we believe it is in everyone's best interest to proceed with a 2-phase strategy and to begin with helping the foundation purchase site number 1. Once the Federal Transit Administration funding is received by TriMet to complete the light rail station, the foundation will have the opportunity to purchase preferred site number 2, which is where we'd like to relocate the locomotives. The collaboration between the project partners has been going exceptionally well, and we are on track, I believe, to facilitate a seamless transition from site 1 to site 2.